All we need is a place to be and a few good friends for some company. If you'd like to stay, you don't have to leave. We'll leave the lights on and the door unlocked. If you drop on by, you don't have to knock. We're happy to share whatever we've got.
The Book of Daniel, and the craziness of the building stuff. I'm sure we will address this with the new board coming up. But in the craziness with all the building stuff and with the beginning of Play Space, I have found myself back in old habits of struggling to find a day off. I'm not going to look at Heather as I say that. I am very much appreciative of everyone's help setting up. It really is a help. But the reality has been it takes at least another hour, if not 2 hours, post what we get done on a Sunday to get things set up for Play Space. And then we've had 1 week where we did really good having people volunteer to tear down. But the other two, I believe, has been my mom and I tearing down. And so it's just created some extra work that we will have to get organized on. But I've had to kind of find hacks around how to study. And I found an ultimate hack this week. Anybody heard of the app Speechify? It's an app where you can put in a website, and it'll read the content, so like lectionary blogs. It was really helpful. Or you can actually snap a photo on your phone of a book, and it will read it to you. And this is what I found. I'm on a 3-day trial, and I think I'm going to use it beyond the 3-day trial. But guess who this week got to read the lectionary blogs to me about Daniel? None other than Snoop Dogg! Yeah, that's one of the options. You can pick different voices to read to you. And I was in my blog yesterday on Daniel 7. I chose Snoop Dogg to read. So I hope this sermon is lit.
You're fired. Get out of here.
Come on, that was funny. Well, Jesse, I couldn't even begin to. Okay, stop it. Okay, on Speechify, I give AI 10+. It was great. I don't think I've ever been able to pay attention to a blog better than with Snoop Dogg reading it to me. And I did it on 1.2 speed, which is great. But there is another pathway this week where AI failed. And I guess I shouldn't throw it too far under the bus because I think we all failed. For the 7 of you or so that voted last week, by the way, show of hands, how many actually voted on which Daniel text we should? We got Jesse, Ken, Steve, Kathleen. Okay, thanks for everyone else who listened. We're going to see if Maddie has better luck with announcements and if you'll listen to her better than me. I had a few votes, and the question in the survey was, what is your favorite story in the book of Daniel? The idea being, whichever one got the most votes would be the one I would preach on. And so we got Daniel in the lion's den got a vote. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the statue in the fiery furnace. That got 1, 2, 3, 4. So 4 votes for that, 2 votes for the lion's den, 5 votes, 6 votes. So essentially it was 7-2. 7 people thought Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace should win. 2 people thought Daniel in the lion's den should win. And nobody voted for Daniel's diet of veggies and water or the interpretation of dreams. And I had you asked me last Sunday at about 3 o'clock, I would have said y'all were right. I was prepared to preach either the fiery furnace or the lion's den. But then I got into studying Daniel this week and realized it's a hot mess. Probably my favorite prophet so far. But it is a hot mess, and there's a lot of strong opinions on the book of Daniel. And central to the book is not just the diet in chapter 1, is not the first interpretation of Nebuchadnezzar's dream in chapter 2, not even the lion's den or the fiery furnace, but central to understanding Daniel well is chapter 7. Chapter 7, which wasn't even an option. Chapter 7, which is Daniel's dream and the interpretation of the dream. And maybe this will cue you in. Daniel's dream of the four beasts. To understand Daniel well is to understand this vision of the four beasts. By the way, my struggle with AI is I then went to ChatGPT, Corey, and I asked them, what were the top 10 most important texts or verses in the Old Testament? Or chapters even. And it gave me Malachi, the refiner's fire. It gave me Amos 5. It gave Daniel 3, the fiery furnace. It gave Psalm 23. It gave Jeremiah 29. Isaiah 53, the suffering servant. It gave the covenant with David. It gave Exodus 12, the Passover. It gave Exodus 20, the Ten Commandments. It gave creation 1-3. Big fail. It missed the call of Abraham. It missed Israel deciding they didn't want to go God's way. We want a king. And I would argue, probably most importantly, in understanding who Jesus is in the New Testament, it missed Daniel 7. What do you have to say for AI? I know. I didn't vote for it either. So we're looking at Daniel 7. And by the way, I also looked at my kids' study Bible here. It also doesn't. It has Daniel 1. It has Daniel, it has the fiery furnace, it has the lion's den. It has no Daniel 7. So, to the kids who are here, which I don't think are actually in the room, so maybe to the adults, one of your pieces of homework during the sermon, if you'd like, or this week, is I would love for you to create an artistic expression of the vision Daniel is about to have. So, Daniel chapter 7, verse 1. In the first year of Babylon's king Belshazzar, Daniel had a dream, a vision in his head. As he lay on his head, he wrote the dream down. Here is the beginning of the count. Show of hands, how many of you remember your dreams? Yeah? Yeah? I wonder sometimes if I don't as often, because the first thing I do when I wake up is go to Facebook or fantasy baseball on my phone instead of like easing into the day without turning on your phone. A second question, for those of you who do remember your dreams, how many of you think your dreams mean something? Yeah? No? I asked my therapist that one day, and this is a Christian dude, goes to United Methodist Church, and I was like, do you think that means something? Do you even think like God would communicate through them? And he's like, oh, H-E double hockey stick, yeah. So that's one therapist. Verse 2, I, Daniel, in the vision I had during the night, I saw four winds of heaven churning the great sea. If you are theological and nerdy, this idea of four winds of heaven churning the great sea should be turning something over in your mind. Can you think of a time in Scripture that this might be pointing back to? Genesis, actually, that's a good point. I didn't think of that. You probably are onto something, David. Oh, if we had a Wednesday, that'd be worth explaining. Yeah, that's very interesting. Genesis 1 is a thing. In Genesis 1, where you have the chaotic waters, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth was tohu vavohu, and darkness covered the face of the deep. It's in the midst of the watery chaos that God creates and brings goodness and shalom. Notice here that in Daniel chapter 7, verse 2, the four winds of heaven churning the great sea, but four giant creatures, four giant beasts emerge. So unlike Genesis, where the breath of God, the ruach of God breathes, and from the watery chaos comes goodness, Genesis is the anti-creation, where the wind and the four winds is really this picture of wind coming from every direction of creation. And out of this time, what we get is not goodness, but we get is beasts. And the four winds, it's as if all the world is creating in this vision of Daniel is beastly characters. Four giant beasts emerge from the sea. Each different from the other. Verse 4. The first was like a lion with eagle's wings. Notice, by the way, It was like a lion. I think the word like there is actually really important. The first was like a lion with eagle's wings. I observed it until its wings were pulled off and it was lifted up from the ground. It was then set on 2 feet like a human being, and it received a human mind. Then I saw another beast, a second one, like a bear. It was raised on one side. This is weird. It had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth. It was told, get up, devour much flesh. This may be worth seeing what ChatGPT would come up with. Verse 6, I kept watching, and suddenly there was another beast. This one was like a leopard. On its back, it had 4 wings like bird wings. This beast had 4 heads. Authority was given to it. After this, you're laughing, but I'm pretty sure this was like a nightmare. After this, as I continued to watch this night vision, I saw a 4th beast, terrifying and hideous, with extraordinary power and with massive iron teeth. By the way, I don't really know what the iron teeth stand for. Jesse, you're our resident theologian. What does the iron teeth stand for? Okay, a predator drone. Okay. As it ate and crushed, its feet smashed whatever was left over. It was different from all the other beasts before it, and it had 10 horns. I was staring at the horns when suddenly another small horn came up between them. 3 of the earlier horns were ripped out to make room for it. On this new horn were eyes like human eyes and a mouth that begged and bragged. How many of you have ever had a nightmare? And when the nightmare reached kind of what felt like the pinnacle of terror, that was when you woke up. Anybody? Yeah? It's interesting in this vision, this dream that Daniel is having. You would think this comes to the pinnacle, but Daniel doesn't wake up. He has to go through it. Verse 9. As I was watching, thrones were raised up. The ancient one took his seat. His clothes were white like snow. His hair was like lamb's wool. His throne was made of flame. Its wheels were blazing fire. A river of fire flowed out from his presence. Thousands upon thousands served him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood ready to serve him. The court sat in session. The scrolls were opened. Who do you think that character is, by the way? Let's see if you're listening. The character is described in verse 9 through 10. Who do you think that might be? It's God. Don't think too hard. In other translations, I like the Common English Bible, but this is one where it may not have done it justice. It says the ancient one. The term in the NRSV or NIV is actually Ancient of Days, which I think may have been a bigger giveaway. But this is a picture of God on God's throne. And especially think through the Old Testament, their monotheistic culture, they would have known nothing of Jesus at that time. This is God. This is Creator God. So question, let me take a step back, because many of us who have grown up in Christian tradition who have heard stories like this, then who are the beasts? Yes, they are definitely a nightmare. Who are the beasts representative of? So, yeah, I think that's why that's interesting, and I want to be careful, because I certainly have some opinions, but I also want to recognize we're doing a lot of, I mean, we're giving opinions here. Ken Steve is right. There is kind of no set in stone thing. The dominant, like if you read commentaries, the dominant, I should have written them down. The dominant take is that the first one, the lion, that's Babylon. That's King Nebuchadnezzar. The second one then, you just get these like the Medes, the Persians, Greece. And then when you get into the weirdness of the horns, one of those, Maddie, you have a master's in this. One of those, is it Epiphanes or whatever? You don't know? Come on! That's okay. I should have written it down. One of them, the thought is, it's some dude who comes in from some nation in like 167 before Christ and just like buys off the high priest, kind of ransacks the temple. You know, they're good Hebrew people who don't eat bacon, right? He comes in, he just slaughters pigs in the temple and serves a lot of bacon, just does a lot of destructive things. So that, like, one of the theories is that's the horns. But I think what so I would say the dominant take is these beasts are referencing nations and empires we would have seen in the Old Testament times, or at least leading up to the times of Christ. But you are referencing, there is a not insignificant section of theologians and experts who are probably much smarter than me that would say these might be looking into the future. And if you go back and watch old, like, kind of interpretive Bible scholar people, like, they would say the bear is Russia and this person is this. That's kind of not where I lean, at least specifically, other than to say I think the vision Daniel may be seeing is expansive in the sense that these beasts certainly refer to nations and empires of his time, but may in fact just be a caricature of all empires of all times. Are you with me? Nations who do beastly things like kill people for the sake of national security. Nations who exploit the poor. Nations who oppress people with unjust economies. Nations that fight strength with strength. I think if Daniel were here today and was interpreting this dream, Daniel would be trying to say some things that yes, these beasts represent Babylon and Persia and the Medes and Greece, but likely I think he would say if he were here today, they also are representative by Putin and by what happened on October 7th. And by some of the things that have happened since October 7th, by the people who were even hurt on October 7th. And I don't want to get in too much trouble today, but I even think if Daniel were here today, he would even call this place we inhabit a beastly sort of kingdom at times. I was struck this week, so this is me being... not sharing this to, like, incite the political thing, but, like, a level of vulnerability to try and prove the point. If you're like me, you've been watching the news of everything going on in the Middle East, and then this week things were the dial was turned up when our kind of own soldier people, I'll come to you in a minute, three of them were killed. And so as I step back out of pastor role, as I step out of interpreter of scripture role, and just think about as a citizen of this place that we inhabit, like, my response to that is, oh snap, it just got escalated, we better come with some fire. Like, we can't let that, again, you don't have to share this, I'm just telling you how I thought, like, we better, without striking a certain nation that really escalates it, we've got to find some side things to do that hit some targets, to do some things. We got to send a message that this will not be tolerated. And let me just say, like, politically, as I think about this as Sean, who lives in a certain place and time, I still think that was the right move. But let me just say, that response is a beastly response. So get the tension inside this. Does that make sense? And I'm not telling you have to agree or disagree with my plot. I'm helping us to see that as Daniel is interpreting how the world works, he is hinting at this Genesis creation and saying that the world has evolved into a decreation where all that the chaos is bringing is more beastly creatures that continue to act beastly in the world. And I would argue, as we interpret, that continues to our day. And even though I think we're hopefully the nicest beast of all the beasts, we still find ourselves living in a beastly place. I do think this text pushes us, and this certainly pushes me, to wrestle with evil. I am one who is oftentimes, and I'll just admit this, I think been guilty of pushing aside the Hasatan figure of true evil, of an embodied evil in our world. And I still want to be really careful when we go down that road. I've heard a lot of good evangelical people go down that road in ways that make me scratch my head and think, I don't know about that. But I do think at times I can be guilty of then writing off the deep sense in which our earth and our world faces real destructive brokenness and evil that's horrific and just feels infected with it. You don't have to turn on CNN or MSNBC or Fox News to see it. You see it in Ukraine. You see it in Israel. You see it in Palestine. You see it in the streets of Seattle. You see it in the number of people who are exploited. You see it with the fastest, at least it was a few years ago, fastest growing industry of kids being sold into slavery. Like, our world has just intensely horrific amounts of beastliness that has infected us. I saw this, one of my favorite theologians is Brad Jersak. This is an Instagram post from his wife. It just says, if we move on from Jesus to an anemic, generic love, how quickly moral outrage disdains the way of true love. Next slide. Moral outrage is the sugar high of emotions. Its hot flashes are not the sustainable fuel required for lasting justice. I saw that, and it reminded me that the reason that is true is because in our world, it is a world filled with beasts. And that's not even to mention the beastly nature of which we are just addicted to our cell phones and not present to the moment. It's not even to mention the beastly nature of the economic practices. I was thinking as I was thinking about this text of the quick back and forth on Wednesday of Maddie's the vision of the good life, a garden. Was it a porch? Was it? And you saying, but how do you get that unless you need money? That very statement is true, but beastly. And I think to read this text in Daniel is to be reminded of the beastly nature of the world we inhabit. Let's keep going quickly. Verse 11. So you've had these four beasts, they've done horrific damage, and then you see the God figure introduced, and then this interesting thing happened. I kept watching. I watched from the moment the horn started bragging until the beast was killed and its body was destroyed. By the way, you should think, when you think about this, here's a good way. Think Stranger Things. How many of you watch Stranger Things? Anybody? Think The Upside Down. Daniel is catching a vision of the Upside Down. Now, I've only watched season one of two of Stranger Things, but I'm adding season three and four to my must-watch list. I've just got to decide whether I'm going to go to Stranger Things first or I'm going to watch Suits or Fargo first. So if you have some thoughts of that, you can tell me later. But when you read Daniel, think the Upside Down world of Stranger Things. Verse 12. Then the authority of the remaining beast was brought to an end. But they were given an extension among the living for a set of time and season. As I continued to watch this night vision of mine, this terror, I suddenly saw one like a human being. And you may have a different translation. Again, this is one where I think the Common English Bible isn't as helpful. It says a human being, but the other translations say the Son of Man. Anybody here have the version the Son of Man? Or y'all in Common English Bible. The human one, Son of Man, interchangeable. Coming with the heavenly clouds, he came to the Ancient One and was presented before him. Rule, glory, and kingship were given to him. All peoples, nations, and languages will serve him. His rule is an everlasting one. It will never pass away. His kingship is indestructible. We are invited into this throne room where the Almighty One has defeated these beasts, but then this new character, this human one, who is coming on the clouds. Who might this be? You say, how many, show of hands, how many would say it's Jesus? No, you're wrong. I mean, you're right. You're totally right, but you're wrong here. You're not yet right. You can't be right until you get to the New Testament. Maybe. There's even a debate about that. Now, I want to say, this isn't Sean being like radical. I can't say, you're right. If you said it's Jesus, you're right technically. But if you were in the Old Testament and you answered Jesus, Daniel would have said, wrong. What's that? Yeah, he was like, this is Jesus. For Daniel and his compadres, as they gathered for like a board meeting after this vision to like decipher it, and they would be like, who's this human one who coming on the clouds? They would be like, okay, maybe it's the Messiah, maybe. Some would say, oh, no, it's not Messiah, it's an angel. And then somebody in the corner who had too much coffee would say, no, it's not an angel, it's not Messiah, it's the representation of all of Israel. So like even in the Old Testament times, there would have been this great debate of who this human one, this Son of Man, who's coming on the clouds was. But what's interesting, read these, by the way, just, in fact, don't read them, we don't have time. I have about six verses that essentially are verses where God in the Old Testament is portrayed as a cloud rider. God riding clouds. So what's fascinating, this is a new move, this for Daniel, I'm going to use a word not because I'm trying to get political, but because I want you to think how radical this was. Daniel is inserting a progressive idea here. Daniel is inserting a new idea here because he is talking about a human one coming on the clouds to the throne who is also a cloud rider. Who else is a cloud rider in the Old Testament? God. So Daniel is making a claim that you have God, you have the Ancient of Days, but now seemingly co-equal to God is this additional figure, this human one who happens to also ride clouds and sit on a throne and somehow be participating in the destruction of the beasts of his day. Does this make, I know it doesn't make sense, but in a not making sense way, does this make sense? Now, why did you all answer Jesus? Jesus, when we get to the New Testament, never called himself the Christ, or that was not his preferred choice to identify himself. And by the way, Christ was not his last name. It wasn't as if Mary Christ was Mary's last. No, no. Christ was the term. Christ was Messiah. Jesus never really used Christ to describe himself. Jesus always, I don't know the exact amount of times, but the preferred way, I was thinking about the first podcast in a while, I didn't set up Maddie for the first question. I said, describe yourself to us. It wasn't fair to her. I wish I could go back and restart the first 5 minutes of it. But Jesus, if we were to interview Jesus on our podcast and we were to say, Jesus, describe yourself, Jesus wouldn't have any trouble with that question. He would have said, I'm the Son of Man. So while Daniel wasn't thinking necessarily of Jesus, Jesus takes this Old Testament title, latches onto it, and uses it to describe himself. Why? Because while there are nightmarish parts of it, the actual end game of it is deeply hopeful. The picture of Daniel 7 is that this tag team of the Ancient of Days and the Son of Man, they probably had really cool theme music when they came out with some pyro. This tag team defeats these beasts. And so why would Jesus cling to this title, Son of Man, especially in moments where he is dealing with, say, demons, or dealing with the church of his day, the high priests, or dealing with the leadership of Rome? Because it was Jesus' way of saying that no matter the level and intensity of the beastly nature that is present in front of me, I am the one that you will see coming on the clouds. By the way, that coming on the clouds is not God's second return. And I'm not saying I don't believe in the second return of Christ. But you got to get this. The coming on the clouds is not Jesus going from heaven to earth as a second coming. The coming on the clouds is Jesus going from earth to heaven. That is the picture we get in Daniel. It's the picture we get in the New Testament. It's the picture we get in the book of Acts. And it's what is described as God's vindication. Jesus, and for us, it's the resurrection and the ascension kind of combined. It is the vindication that the self-giving, sacrificial, loving way of Jesus will inevitably and always overcome the beastly nature of nations and behaviors and powers that seemingly are the things that dominate us today. Here's the end game. And I think maybe the takeaways and the observations for us today. I'm curious why that didn't work. We'll have to figure that out, Maddie, because it's worked the whole service. And um, I'm convinced that for part of Daniel's ability to enter into the dreams and encounter the mystery of God, it's because Daniel put himself in a place and a posture with rhythms that helped him to lean into that reality. In a world that is so busy and so loud, in a world where the last thing we look at before bed and the first thing we look at when we wake up is a screen, do we have rhythms in our lives that allow us to encounter the mystery that is God, the mystery we call love and personified in Jesus? And I don't mean to undermine these normal, like scripture and prayer and church, those are all important, but what are walking and contemplation and journaling and quiet times and sitting there, where are the rhythms and practices for us that, like Daniel, will posture us in such a way that when God wants to speak words of hope in a world of beastly nature, we will receive? Secondly, may we, like Daniel, lean into the mystery of faith. Daniel, for his whole life, had grown up hearing about the Ancient of Days. That was not new. That was not shocking. That was not mystery. What was mysterious for Daniel was this new figure, the Son of Man, who was distinct and yet somehow equal to. So may we find ways to posture ourselves. We who have grown up in the church, we who have gone to Sundays and Sunday nights and Sunday schools, we who have ChatGPT who can give us a devotional in 10 seconds. May we who know it all, and if we don't know, we just go to Wikipedia. May we posture ourselves in such a way that the divine can bring us not into just things we know, but can invite us into a deeper and deeper mystery, so much so that we can say, I knew about the Ancient of Days, but now there is this Son of Man. And he's coming on a cloud. But the point is that this human one, this Ancient of Days, who we now know from the New Testament, is Jesus, is the embodiment of what it means to be human. I thought about playing another song. Have you heard the song? I forget who it is. I'm only human. Duh, 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 duh. Right? Thank you for somebody. That song goes on to describe that being human is one who makes mistakes and is flawed, and I get that. But in Jesus, what we see is what it means to be fully human, to be one who does not sin, to be one who loves holistically, to be one who is holy. So let us not let the beasts of our world describe what it means to be human. Let us let the human one describe what it means to be human. So to be one who does that which is anti-love is to give ourselves to a beastly nature that is anti-human. Jesus is the full embodiment of what it means to be human. To fail to follow Jesus' way of love well is to fail to live into the full humanity that God has invited us into. So one of the questions a day like today invites us to ask is, where are the beastly practices, rhythms, habits, feelings that are gripping you? And how might the truly human one invite us to lean in to healing? And then lastly, I just have this question, this vision. It's crazy. It's weird. It's different than we kind of know in our scientific world. And so I just had this question and a quote from a commentary, which is never good to read a quote from a commentary, whatever. But the question is, do we believe this? Do we really believe this? The commentary says this: visionary religion has always been dangerous and uncontrolled for any institutional status quo. Visionary religion draws deep from the hopes and passions of people, especially in dire and despairing conditions. Side note, I think we can very quickly jump to the poor and the exploited and those who are in war-torn countries, and it's appropriate to do so. But also, those in despairing conditions, we are a people who find ourselves living in a world full of beasts, so we can also identify. Visionary religion speaks to the failure of established attitudes and traditions, and it opens the way to new possibilities. Goes on to say, apocalyptic visions can lead to hope, and hopes have the potential to give birth to plans. For Christians, to live with a constant sense of the advent of Christ is not irresponsible disengagement from the world, but a lifestyle within the world that is built on the visions of God's true kingship and dominion. It is to live as if the sentence on the beasts has already been carried out, despite the fact that their lives appear to be prolonged for a season of time. The rule of human beings, apart from the cloud walker, only brings more chaos. Do we believe this? Father, help us. Help us to be a people who catch your vision. Help us to not get so used to the beastly nature of our world that we allow it to become the norm, that we allow it to be that which defines what it means to be human. But help us to be captured by hope and by love and by the spirit of the truly human one, inviting us to step into our full humanity, giving our way ourselves to love of neighbor, in love of enemy, and in love of the one we really, really don't want to love. Give us visions. Help us to believe. Help us in our unbelief. In your name.